co-ed restrooms in government schools led by fools. As the school year begins, public elementary, middle, and high schools across the country are being asked by parents of trans-identifying children to sexually integrate restrooms and locker rooms. These parents are making the presumptuous request that all children be forced to share private spaces with opposite-sex peers. School boards and administrations are acquiescing, some because they've embraced trans-cultic assumptions and others out of fear of litigious leftists. All suffer from indefensible ignorance on an issue of urgency and critical importance. Here are just a few of the things of which most school board members and administrators remain ignorant. They're ignorant of the possible causes of sexual confusion and bodily alienation, which include family dysfunction, sexual abuse, and sexual harassment. They're ignorant of the phenomenon called rapid onset gender dysphoria. Fortunately for them, a study by Dr. Lisa Littman, physician and associate professor of the practice of behavioral sciences at Brown University, was just published that examines this troubling phenomenon. And I quote, "In online forums, parents have been reporting that their children are experiencing what is described here as rapid onset gender dysphoria, appearing for the first time during puberty or even after its completion. The onset of gender dysphoria seemed to occur in the context of belonging to a peer group where one, multiple, or even all of the friends have become gender dysphoric and transgender identified during the same time frame. Parents also report that their children exhibited an increase in social media / internet use prior to disclosure of a transgender identity. The worsening of mental well-being in parent-child relationships and behaviors that isolate adolescent and young adult children from their parents, families, non-transgender friends, and mainstream sources of information are particularly concerning. More research is needed to better understand this phenomenon, its implications, and scope." End quote. School administrators and school board members are ignorant of the high rate of gender dysphoria among those on the autism spectrum. They're ignorant of the low rates of suicide among gender dysphoric children and that there is no persuasive evidence that gender transition reduces gender dysphoric children's likelihood of killing themselves. They're ignorant of the high rates of desistance in gender dysphoric children who don't socially and chemically transition. Desistance is the abatement of gender dysphoria and opposite sex identification with a concomitant acceptance of one's biological sex. They're ignorant of the phenomenon of detransitioning, also called trans regret, which is when people stop pretending to be the sex they are not. The fundamental feature of detransitioning is ceasing to take risky cross-sex hormones. They're ignorant of the conditioning they facilitate when they allow co-ed restrooms and locker rooms. Trans activists and their progressive collaborators believe that society conditions children into believing that biological sex matters. They maintain the peculiar belief that stereotypes precede and shape sexual differentiation rather than the other way around. Trans activists and their water-carrying school leaders ignore that through their actions, they are engaging in the most egregious social conditioning the world has ever seen. Through pronoun policing, mandatory co-ed private spaces, litigation, falsified birth certificates and driver's licenses, public shaming, epithet hurling, and cultural indoctrination on a massive scale, through control of government schools, academia, the press, the arts, and professional medical and mental health communities, public recognition of sex differences in all contexts is being eradicated. Ignorance and cowardice are on full display in a Kansas City, Missouri school district that has installed co-ed restrooms in two new elementary schools and retrofitted two middle schools and one high school with sexually integrated restrooms. The walls and doors in stalls are floor to ceiling, and there are common areas with shared sink troughs so boys and girls can wash up together. Executive Director of Organizational Development, Rochelle Daniels, suggests that co-ed restrooms were necessary because of the district's policy about non-discrimination. That's kind of weird, because Title IX of the Educational Amendments of 1972 say, quote, a recipient of federal funds may provide separate toilet, locker room, and shower facilities on the basis of sex. Of course, the signs on the spanking new restrooms don't say co-ed. That would expose too much. The signs say gender neutral. That term is silly because the trans cult asserts with sacrilegious fervor that gender refers to the socially constructed roles, conventions, and behaviors arbitrarily associated with males or females. It makes no sense to designate restrooms role neutral. No one has ever cared what roles restroom users assume or conventions they adopt as they live and move and have their being before and after excreting. All that matters when it comes to restroom usage is their biological sex. The signs inadvertently admit the co-ed nature of the restrooms. They also include the symbols for the two sexes that exist. What these silly signs are likely alluding to is not gender, but gender identity, which trans cultists define as the subjective, internal, felt sense of being male or female. If trans cultists are to be believed, which they shouldn't be, there are scores of existing gender identities. If trans cultists win the day, signage should say something like, all gender identities. And those pesky male-female symbols should be erased. As with gender, when it comes to restroom usage, no one has ever cared about the subjective internal felt sense of the maleness or femaleness of restroom users. Why should they? What do I care if the woman in the stall next to me wishes she were a man? Trans cultists view the idea that restroom usage should correspond to biological sex as arbitrary and socially constructed. But it's no more arbitrary, socially constructed, and culturally imposed than is the radical idea that restroom usage should correspond to subjective internal feelings about one's sex, or that restroom usage should correspond to nothing. In addition to the aspects of the trans debate listed earlier and about which school administrators and board members are largely ignorant, there's also the matter never discussed or likely even contemplated by our fearless leaders of epistemology. It's a big word for the study of knowledge. What do we know and how do we arrive at knowledge? Can we rely on the truth of our beliefs? The Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy explains that epistemology is, quote, the study of knowledge and justified belief. As the study of knowledge, epistemology is concerned with the following questions. What are the necessary and sufficient conditions of knowledge? What are its sources? What is its structure and what are its limits? End quote. School administrators and board members are making revolutionary changes in restroom and locker room practices and policies based on assumptions and information. What are those assumptions? Are they sound? What criteria do they use to evaluate the soundness of these assumptions? If they base their decisions on information, what criteria do they apply to the research cited or the organizations that publish the research? Do they seek out and evaluate dissenting views, applying the same standards to all research? So many necessary questions completely ignored. The request by children or teens to have all others refer to them by incorrect pronouns, or to force opposite-sex peers to share private spaces with them, is what the trans cult and its collaborators refer to as social transitioning. The word social implies society, which in turn assumes the notion of the common good. How do we know whether it's good for children to access opposite-sex spaces? Is it good for all children? It's certainly arguable that it's good for gender dysphoric children. It's even more arguable that it's good for all children. What isn't discussed is whether co-ed restrooms equipped with toileting closets and shared sinks undermine modesty. Will these types of restrooms serve as an incremental step in desensitizing students at young ages to engaging in private bodily functions with opposite-sex peers? Will these types of facilities cultivate or undermine the virtue of modesty? Will these types of facilities reinforce the belief that objective, immutable biological sex per se is profoundly meaningful? Or will they reinforce the trans cultic belief that biological sex per se has no intrinsic meaning? So many necessary questions completely ignored.